Chapter 8. My little passage with Jacobus the merchant became known generally. One or two of my acquaintances made distant allusions to it. Perhaps the mulatto boy had talked. I must confess that people appeared rather scandalized, but not with Jacobus's brutality. A man I knew remonstrated with me for my hastiness. I gave him the whole story of my visit, not forgetting the telltale resemblance of the wretched mulatto boy to his tormentor. He was not surprised. No doubt, no doubt. What of that? In a jovial tone he assured me that there must be many of that sort. The elder Jacobus had been a bachelor all his life. A highly respectable bachelor. But there had never been open scandal in that connection. His life had been quite regular. It could cause no offense to anyone. I said that I had been offended considerably. My interlocutor opened very wide eyes. Why? Because a mulatto lad got a few knocks? That was not a great affair, surely. I had no idea how insolent and untruthful these half-castes were. In fact, he seemed to think Mr. Jacobus rather kind than otherwise, to employ that youth at all. A sort of amiable weakness which could be forgiven. This acquaintance of mine belonged to one of the old French families, descendants of the old colonists, all noble, all impoverished, and living a narrow domestic life in dull, dignified decay. The men, as a rule, occupy inferior posts in government offices or in business houses. The girls are almost always pretty, ignorant of the world, kind and agreeable and generally bilingual. They prattle innocently both in French and English. The emptiness of their existence passes belief. I obtained my entry into a couple of such households, because some years before, in Bombay, I had occasion to be of use to a pleasant, ineffectual young man who was rather stranded there, not knowing what to do with himself, or even how to get home to his island again. It was a matter of 200 rupees or so, but, when I turned up, the family made a point of showing their gratitude, by admitting me to their intimacy. My knowledge of the French language made me specially acceptable. They had meantime managed to marry the fellow to a woman nearly twice his age, comparatively well off. The only profession he was really fit for. But it was not all cakes and ale. The first time I called on the couple, she spied a little spot of grease on the poor devil's pantaloons, and made him a screaming scene of reproaches so full of sincere passion, that I sat terrified, as at a tragedy of Racine. Of course there was never question of the money I had advanced him, but his sisters, Miss Angel and Miss Mary, and the aunts of both families, who spoke quaint archaic French of pre-revolution period, and a host of distant relations adopted me for a friend outright in a manner which was almost embarrassing. It was with the eldest brother he was employed at a desk in my consignee's office that I was having this talk about the merchant Jacobus. He regretted my attitude, and nodded his head sagely. An influential man. One never knew when one would need him. I expressed my immense preference for the shopkeeper of the two. At that my friend looked grave. What on earth are you pulling that long face about? I cried impatiently. He asked me to see his garden, and I have a good mind to go someday. Don't do that, he said, so earnestly that I burst into a fit of laughter, but he looked at me without a smile. This was another matter altogether. At one time the public conscience of the island had been mightily troubled by my Jacobus. The two brothers had been partners for years in great harmony when the wandering circus came to the island, and my Jacobus became suddenly infatuated with one of the lady riders. What made it worse was that he was married. He had not even the grace to conceal his passion. It must have been strong indeed to carry away such a large, placid creature. His behavior was perfectly scandalous. He followed that woman to the Cape, and apparently traveled at the tail of that beastly circus to other parts of the world, in a most degrading position. The woman soon ceased to care for him, and treated him worse than a dog. Most extraordinary stories of moral degradation were reaching the island at that time. He had not the strength of mind to shake himself free. The grotesque image of a fat, pushing ship Chandler, enslaved by an unholy love spell, fascinated me, and I listened rather open-mouthed to the tale as old as the world, a tale which had been the subject of legend, of moral fables, of poems, but which so ludicrously failed to fit the personality. What a strange victim for the gods! Meantime his deserted wife had died. His daughter was taken care of by his brother, who married her as advantageously as was possible in the circumstances. "Oh! The Mrs. Doctor!" I exclaimed. "You know that?" "Yes. A very able man. He wanted a lift in the world, and there was a good bit of money from her mother, besides the expectations. Of course, they don't know him," he added. "The doctor nods in the street, I believe, but he avoids speaking to him when they meet on board a ship, as must happen sometimes." I remarked that this surely was an old story by now. My friend assented. "But it was Jacobus's own fault that it was neither forgiven nor forgotten. He came back ultimately. But how? Not in a spirit of contrition, in a way to propitiate his scandalized fellow citizens. He must needs drag along with him a child, a girl. He spoke to me of a daughter who lives with him," I observed, very much interested. "She's certainly the daughter of the circus woman," said my friend. "She may be his daughter too. I am willing to admit that she is. In fact, I have no doubt, but he did not see why she should have been brought into a respectable community to perpetuate the memory of the scandal. And that was not the worst. Presently something much more distressing happened. That abandoned woman turned up. Landed from a mail boat. What? Here? To claim the child, perhaps," I suggested. "Not she." My friendly informant was very scornful. "Imagine a painted, haggard, agitated, desperate hag. Been cast off in Mozambique by somebody who paid her passage here. As he had been injured internally by a kick from a horse, as he hadn't a cent on her when she got ashore, I don't think she even asked to see the child. At any rate, not till the last day of her life. Jacobus hired for her a bungalow to die in. He got a couple of sisters from the hospital to nurse her through these few months. If he didn't marry her in extremis as the good sisters tried to bring about, it's because she wouldn't even hear of it. As the nun said, the woman died impenitent. It was reported that she ordered Jacobus out of the room with her last breath. This may be the real reason why he didn't go into mourning himself. He only put the child into black. While she was little, she was to be seen sometimes about the streets attended by a Negro woman, but since she became of age, to put her hair up, I don't think as he has set foot outside that garden once. She must be over 18 now. Thus my friend, with some added details, such as, that he didn't think the girl had spoken to three people of any position in the island, that an elderly female relative of the brothers Jacobus had been induced by extreme poverty to accept the position of governant to the girl. As to Jacobus's business, which certainly annoyed his brother, it was a wise choice on his part. It brought him in contact only with strangers of passage, whereas any other would have given rise to all sorts of awkwardness with his social equals. The man was not wanting in a certain tact, only he was naturally shameless. For why did he want to keep that girl with him? It was most painful for everybody. I thought suddenly and with profound disgust of the other Jacobus, and I could not refrain from saying slyly, "I suppose if he employed her, say, as a scullion in his household and occasionally pulled her hair or boxed her ears, the position would have been more regular, less shocking to the respectable class to which he belongs." He was not so stupid as to miss my intention, and shrugged his shoulders impatiently. "You don't understand. To begin with, she's not a mulatto. And a scandal is a scandal. People should be given a chance to forget. I dare say it would have been better for her if he had been turned into a scullion or something of that kind. Of course he's trying to make money in every sort of petty way, but in such a business there'll never be enough for anybody to come forward. When my friend left me, I had a conception of Jacobus and his daughter existing, a lonely pair of castaways, on a desert island, the girl sheltering in the house, as if it were a cavern in a cliff, and Jacobus going out to pick up a living for both on the beach exactly like two shipwrecked people who always hope for some rescuer, to bring them back at last into touch with the rest of mankind. But Jacobus's bodily reality did not fit in with this romantic view. When he turned up on board in the usual course, he sipped the cup of coffee placidly, asked me if I was satisfied, and I hardly listened to the harbor gossip he dropped slowly in his low, voice-saving enunciation. I had then troubles of my own. My ship chartered, my thoughts dwelling on the success of a quick round voyage, I had been suddenly confronted by a shortage of bags. A catastrophe. The stock of one special kind, called pockets, seemed to be totally exhausted. A consignment was shortly expected. It was afloat, on its way, but, meantime, the loading of my ship had stopped. I had enough to worry about. My consignees, who had received me with such heartiness on my arrival now, in the character of my charterers, listened to my complaints with polite helplessness. Their manager, the old maidish, thin man, who so prudishly didn't even like to speak about the impure Jacobus, gave me the correct commercial view of the position. My dear captain, he was retracting his leathery cheeks into a condescending, shark-like smile. He were not morally obliged to tell you of a possible shortage before you signed the charter party. It was for you to guard against the contingency of a delay, strictly speaking. But of course we shouldn't have taken any advantage. This is no one's fault, really. We ourselves have been taken unawares, he concluded primly, with an obvious lie. This lecture, I confess, had made me thirsty. Suppressed rage generally produces that effect, and as I strolled on aimlessly I bethought myself of the tall earthenware pitcher in the captain's room of the Jacobus Tor. With no more than a nod to the men I found assembled there, I poured down a deep, cool draught on my indignation, then another, and then, becoming dejected, I sat plunged in cheerless reflections. The others read, talked, smoked, bandied over my head some unsubtle chaff. But my abstraction was respected. And it was without a word to anyone that I rose and went out, only to be quite unexpectedly accosted in the bustle of the store by Jacobus the outcast. Glad to see you, Captain. What? Going away? You haven't been looking so well these last few days, I notice. Run down, eh? He was in his shirt sleeves, and his words were in the usual course of business, but they had a human note. It was commercial amenity, but I had been a stranger to amenity in that connection. I do verily believe, from the direction of his heavy glance towards a certain shelf, that he was going to suggest the purchase of Clarkson's nerve tonic, which he kept in stock, when I said impulsively, I am rather in trouble with my loading. Wide awake under his sleepy, broad mask with glued lips, he understood at once, had a movement of the head so appreciative, that I relieved my exasperation by exclaiming, surely there must be 1,100 quarterbacks to be found in the colony. It's only a matter of looking for them. Again that slight movement of the big head, and in the noise and activity of the store that tranquil murmur. To be sure. But then people likely to have a reserve of quarterbacks wouldn't want to sell. They'd need that size themselves. That's exactly what my consignees are telling me. Impossible to buy. Bosh. They don't want to. It suits them to have the ship hung up. But if I were to discover the lot they would have to look here, Jacobus. You are the man to have such a thing up your sleeve. He protested with a ponderous swing of his big head. I stood before him helplessly, being looked at by those heavy eyes with a veiled expression, as of a man after some soul-shaking crisis. Then, suddenly, it's impossible to talk quietly here, he whispered. I'm very busy. But if you could go and wait for me in my house, it's less than 10 minutes' walk. Oh, yes, you don't know the way. He called for his coat and offered to take me there himself. He would have to return to the store at once for an hour or so to finish his business, and then he would be at liberty to talk over with me that matter of quarterbacks. This program was breathed out at me through slightly parted, still lips. His heavy, motionless glance rested upon me, placid as ever, the glance of a tired man, but I felt that it was searching too. I could not imagine what he was looking for in me and kept silent, wondering. I am asking you to wait for me in my house till I am at liberty to talk this matter over. You will? Why, of course, I cried. But I cannot promise, I dare say not, I said. Don't expect a promise. I mean I can't even promise to try the move I've in my mind. One must see first. ... All right. I'll take the chance. I'll wait for you, as long as you like. What else have I to do in this infernal hole of a port? Before I had uttered my last words we had set off at a swinging pace. We turned a couple of corners, and entered a street completely empty of traffic, of semi-rural aspect, paved with cobblestones nestling in grass tufts. The house came to the line of the roadway, a single story on an elevated basement of rough stones, so that our heads were below the level of the windows as we went along. All the jalousies were tightly shut, like eyes, and the house seemed fast asleep in the afternoon sunshine. The entrance was at the side, in an alley even more grass-grown than the street. A small door, simply on the latch. With a word of apology, as to showing me the way, Jacobus preceded me up a dark passage, and led me across the naked parquet floor of what I supposed to be the dining room. It was lighted by three glass doors which stood wide open onto a veranda rather loggia. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.